Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
Welcome to WGN Radio Theater.
A special three-hour presentation.
And your hosts, Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Man, I wish I had a voice as deep as Chris Duffy's voice.
Yeah, we all do.
Gosh. I don't know if it sounds so good on you, Lisa.
If I had a voice like Chris Duffy?
But man, Chris Duffy's voice is just awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, well, he's the one that did our intro there. So if you didn't know, that's what we're talking about here.
Boy, I don't know if I could take voice lessons from him.
Probably. Cost you the big bucks, though.
Well, hello, Lisa Wolf.
Hi, Carl. Glad to be here. We're a few minutes late, but no problem.
Ashley Byhun is our producer tonight.
Go, Ashley.
Of course, Mike Gastella is our executive producer, and we have some terrific classic radio shows for you. Now, we thought we were going to be getting on even later, so we were going to have to play a quarter hour Vic and Sade broadcast, but we're not going to have to do that. We're going to actually play The Sealed Book, A Good Mystery, to start things off in like 2 minutes. Be ready, folks. We're going to play The Sealed Book. After that, in our second hour, it's The Shadow with Bill Johnstone. Third hour, it's Broadway Is My Beat, Good Detective Adventure. Fourth hour will be a sci-fi broadcast on Dimension X. And in our fifth hour, the last hour, another detective, Nick Carter, Master Detective from 1949. Sound good?
It's a great lineup.
This first show we're going to play is called The Sealed Book, Good Mystery Series, produced by the same two guys that Robert A. Arthur and David Kogan that brought us The Mysterious Traveler and The Strange Dr. Weird. This was a mystery series that they created. And believe it or not, Lisa, this show originally aired on this very radio station, WGN, on March 18th, 1945. Here's the weird thing about it. It aired at 2:30 in the afternoon. Would you think a mystery show should be on like later at night, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock?
I'm thinking Saturday, maybe around 10:20 or so would be the best time.
Well, maybe that's why we're going to play
it. Here
we
are.
But this was the first show in the series, and it was aired on this radio station, AM 720 WGN, March 18th, 1945. It's called The Hand of Death. Here is, uninterrupted now, The Sealed Book.
The Sealed Book.
Once again, the keeper of the book is ready to unlock the ponderous volume in which is recorded all the secrets and mysteries of mankind through the ages, all the lore and learning of the ancients, all the strange and mystifying stories of the past, the present, and the future. Keeper of the book, what tale will you tell us this time?
First, I must unlock the great padlock, which keeps the sealed book safe from prying eyes. Now, what story shall I tell you? I have here tales of every kind. Tales of murder, of madness, of dark deeds, and of events strange beyond all belief. There. Now let me see. Yes. Here's a tale for you. A dark story of two brothers. One of them killed because he could not help himself. The other one was interested in murder, too, but in a very different way. The title of the tale is The Hands of Death. Here is the tale as it is written in the sealed book. It began in San Francisco on a night of thick suffocating fog. A young man hurrying homeward turns a corner and bumps abruptly into a huge figure striding toward him.
Oh, excuse me. Fog is so thick, I didn't see you.
It's all right. Tell me, do you live here?
Hmm?
Here in San Francisco?
Why, yes, I do.
Do you know where Edward Morlock lives now?
Why, no, I... No, I never heard of him. Now, if you'll excuse me...
Wait.
But I've really got to get home.
And... I just want a light from your cigarette.
Oh, of course. Here, I'll hold it for you.
Just hold it like that. What is it? What's the matter?
Nothing. It's nothing.
It's my hands, isn't it? They frightened you.
No, it's nothing.
My hands, they disgusted you.
No, of course not.
They frightened you because they're not like other people's hands.
No, let go of me. I assure you that...
Thought I was a freak.
Let go of me. You're crazy.
I'm not crazy, do you hear? I'll show you.
No.
I'll show you.
Phantom Strangler in San Francisco, victim killed in fog. X-ray.
So, the Phantom Strangler is at work in San Francisco. Jennings will be interested in that.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Morlock.
Huh? Oh, yes, Jennings?
The postman just brought this package, sir.
Oh, package, eh? Give it to me.
Yes, sir.
Now, wheel me over to the window.
Of course, sir.
This is close enough, Jennings. This package, I suppose you noticed it came from my agent in New York?
Yes, sir, I did.
Then perhaps you can guess what's in it. Hey, Jennings?
No, sir, but I have no doubt it's another nice addition to your collection of objects having to do with famous murders, sir.
Yes, indeed, a nice addition. But speaking of murders, have you seen this morning's San Francisco paper yet?
No, sir.
Well, look at these headlines. Read them out loud.
Playboy murdered in fog. Phantom strangler breaks victim's neck. Then he's back. Your brother Kane is back.
Yes, back in San Francisco, looking for me.
And he'll keep looking for you. And if he finds you, he'll kill you.
Yes, he's dedicated his life to that purpose. And all because he feels I cheated him out of his share of the money our father left us. Oh, it's a great pity.
Yes, sir. Of course, we know the truth.
Quite so. As you say, we know the truth. However, I hardly think Kane will find me here.
No, sir.
So we'll forget about him. Jennings, tomorrow afternoon, a neighbor is dropping in for tea.
A neighbor, sir?
Yes, Inspector Tennant, the head of the local police force. He's coming to view my little collection.
Of course, sir.
He may bring a friend with him. So have plenty of everything?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's all. What are you waiting for?
Excuse me, sir. I wanted to speak to you about this check you gave me yesterday for my month's salary.
Well, what about it? It's for the usual 500, isn't it?
Yes, sir, but you see, Mr. Morlock, I've been thinking in these times I ought to have more.
More? Just how much do you consider your services worth, Jennings?
Shall we say 1,000 a month?
1,000 a month?
It's quite reasonable, I think. After all, if I were to tell the authorities all I know about your father's will and how it happened that the entire fortune came to you and none to Kane...
Never mind, Jennings. I'll make out another check.
Thank you, sir.
But be careful you don't drive me too far, or you may regret it.
Oh, I think I'll be safe enough, Mr. Morlock. After all, confined to that wheelchair as you are, you need me.
That's enough. You'll get your check later.
Yes, sir. Very good, Mr. Morlock.
So you're getting greedy, are you, Jennings? I must find some way to discourage you. Yes, some way to discourage you.
The next afternoon, Edward Morlock, the strange crippled collector of murder relics, enjoyed himself thoroughly playing host to Police Inspector lieutenant, and Mr. Norman Smith, a criminologist friend of his. He began by showing them his latest acquisition, the one that had come by mail just the day before.
And now, gentlemen, look.
A cashmere shawl.
Yes, but no ordinary cashmere shawl. Until last month, it was owned by two very old sisters who lived in a dingy house in Baltimore.
In Baltimore?
Yes.
You mean that's the shawl?
Exactly, gentlemen. That's the shawl with which the two old ladies were strangled by a sneak thief.
Well, I'll be darned.
It's a prize worthy even of my collection, which is, I flatter myself, the most complete of its kind ever assembled.
Funny hobby, I'd call it.
Every man to his taste, Inspector. Murder is your business, but it's my hobby. Now, if you'll just pull back those curtains there, the rest of my collection is on the shelves behind them.
These curtains?
That's right.
Well, I'll be... Jacob.
This is most interesting, Mr. Morlock.
Yes, I knew you'd think so. Look there on the wall. An authentic headsman's axe. It was used in the brutal murder of the Baron de Morlaix, an ancestor of mine in the 15th century. And right there below it is the blood-stained dress worn by one of the victims of Jack the Ripper. And on the next shelf, you see... And so there, gentlemen, you have the highlights of my collection. How do you like them?
Well, if that's the sort of thing you're interested in, I'll say your collection does seem complete.
It is indeed. In fact, there's really nothing missing except perhaps a murderer and a victim.
What did you say?
That the only thing missing from your collection is a murderer and a victim.
A most interesting thought, Mr. Smith. And after all, why not?
Why not what?
Oh, excuse me, Inspector. I was just thinking out loud.
Oh. Well, I'm afraid we got to go now, Morlock. Hey, Smith?
Yes, you're right, Inspector.
It's been a great pleasure having you, gentlemen. And I do hope you'll call again.
Yes, Mr. Morlock, you rang.
Yes, Jennings. Before you help me to bed, I want you to mail these letters.
Yes, sir.
They're to major newspapers in San Francisco and contain a message to be inserted in their personal columns.
A message?
Yes, to my brother, Kane. We used to communicate this way in the past.
But,
here is a copy of the message. You may read it.
If the gentleman with the unusual hands will visit his brother in Santa Villa, he will learn something to his advantage. You're inviting him here?
Exactly.
You've decided to play safe, to trap him and turn him over to the police?
Oh, that's clever of you, Jennings. Yes, very clever. But you've already proved you're clever, haven't you? Now just take these letters out and mail them, and soon, quite soon, I think, we shall be seeing my dear brother Kane again.
And now for the rest of my story, the hand of death. As it is written in the sealed book. After Edward Morlock had put into effect his plan to bring his brother Cain to him, he sat in his wheelchair and waited, seeming much amused at some secret thought of his own. One day passed, then two, then three. And then the newspapers carried strange new headlines.
Hey, Cray, read all about it. Phantom strangler in Los Angeles. Extra, read all about it.
So Brother Kane was in Los Angeles last night, Jennings. Yeah, he's getting closer. I shouldn't be surprised if he arrived here tonight.
I don't like it.
Oh, nonsense, Jennings. You know you've got nothing to fear from Kane. Unless, of course, you're so careless as to make some remark about his hands.
I know, but he intends to kill you.
I think I'll be able to control him. I want you to bring me a glass of milk. Kane is very fond of milk.
Glass of milk?
With a triple dose of sleeping powder in it.
But I don't understand.
Never mind. Just do as I say.
What's that?
I imagine that's Kane now.
Kane, here already?
Quick, I'll let him in. You get that glass of milk ready and bring it in when I ring.
Yes, sir, when you ring, sir.
Oh, come in, Kane. I've unlocked the window.
Yes, I'll come in, Edward, now that I've found you at last.
Well, I'd hardly say you found me, Kane. I sent for you.
It's the same thing. Now I'm where I can put my hands around your throat at last. I'm going to kill you. Do you hear? Kill you.
Kane, sit down.
What?
Sit down. I want to talk to you.
All right, I'll sit down, but you can't change my mind.
Tell me, Kane, how many people have you killed since you got out of the penitentiary?
Seven.
Seven murders?
They looked at my hands. They were disgusted. I didn't kill them. My hands did. You hear? I didn't want to kill them, but my hands killed them anyway.
Why, of course, I understand. Your hands. Your great-grandfather had hands like yours, you know, Kane.
Don't talk about it anymore.
Of course not, Kane. But you must be hungry. I'll ring for Jennings. He'll fix something for you.
Yes, I am hungry.
But please, Kane, don't startle the poor fellow. You know, he's very much afraid of you.
Why? Why is he afraid of me?
It's your hands. He says they give him nightmares.
My hands give him nightmares?
Oh, you mustn't blame him, Kane. He can't help it.
My hands give him nightmares.
Yes, sir. I've brought you a glass of milk, Mr. Morlock.
My hands frighten me.
Oh, thank you, Jennings. Just put it down here.
Yes, sir.
Why are you looking at me like that, Jennings?
I'm not looking at you, Mr. Kane.
You're looking at my hands. They upset you. They give you nightmares.
No, Mr. Kane, that's not true.
I'll show you. I'll give you a reason to be afraid of my hands.
Mr. Morlock, help me!
I'll show you. I'll show you.
Let go, you're kidding. Help!
There. That'll teach you to be afraid of my hands.
You can let him go now, Kane.
He's dead. My hands, they've killed again.
Yes, he's dead. Oh, you've been very wicked, Kane.
I didn't want to kill him. My hands did it. My hands, you hear?
You must be quiet now, Kane. You must rest.
I didn't want to kill. Didn't want to kill him.
Here, drink this milk. Then lie down and rest for a while. We'll talk some more in the morning.
All right. I'll drink it.
I'll take care of everything. That's right, Kane. Lie back and sleep. Sleep soundly. So, you'd blackmail me, would you, Jennings? And you'd kill me, would you, Kane? But I've been too clever for both of you. Hello. Hello, police headquarters. Connect me with Inspector Tennant, please. I want to report a murder. And so, there you are, Inspector. Kane was in the penitentiary for assault with intent to kill. Apparently, he escaped since then. He's been seeking for me, meaning to kill me.
Good heavens, Morlock. Then he's the strangler who's been doing all these killings.
Yes, I'm afraid so. Oh, and I never guessed until he showed up tonight to kill me, because he thought, you see, quite wrongly, that I had cheated him of his inheritance. Jennings bravely came to my rescue, and Kane throttled him. Then I tricked Kane into drinking some drugged milk, and, well, there you are.
But why, man? Why? Why did he kill all these people?
Because of his hands.
His hands?
Well, you saw his hands. Tremendously strong. Not hands at all, really, but more like demon's claws. Kane is morbidly sensitive about his deformity. When he feels someone is frightened by his hands, he kills them. Just like that.
It's a good thing we got him at last.
You can take him along now quite safely, but be sure to keep him well locked up, Inspector, and don't let anyone get within reach of his hands.
A few weeks later, Kane Morlock entered the lethal chamber of the state penitentiary. Edward Morlock, the condemned man's invalid brother, was one of the few spectators. Kane Morlock, with his last breath, cursed his brother and swore that someday he would be avenged. Then he died. The following day, Inspector Tennant and his friend Norman Smith paid Edward Morlock another visit.
Oh, good evening, Inspector and Mr. Smith. It's very kind of you to stop by tonight.
We dropped in to see how you were making out, Mr. Morlock. Thought maybe, what with your trip yesterday and the shock, that perhaps...
Oh, no, I'm quite all right, thank you. What must be, must be. You see, I am a philosopher.
You have somebody looking after you?
Yes, Philippe. A Filipino boy is taking poor Jennings' place. Oh, and, gentlemen, that reminds me. I have something here that will interest you.
Mm-hmm. Something that'll interest us?
Yes, here on the table beside me. This jar.
Oh, a burial urn, isn't it, Mr. Morlock?
Exactly. And in this burial urn are the ashes of poor murdered Jennings.
Jennings' ashes?
Yes.
You mean you're going to keep them with you?
But of course, gentlemen. I was very fond of Jennings, very fond. What more fitting than that I should keep his ashes to remind me of his years of faithful service? Besides, well, I can always look upon them as part of my little collection.
Your collection?
Yes, Inspector. It was Mr. Smith here who pointed out that, complete as it was, it lacked both a murderer and his victim. Well, here are the ashes of the victim.
Great heavens.
That's rather a unique item, Mr. Morlock.
Yes, indeed, an item any collector would be proud of. But the really choice addition to my collection is here in this box, which just arrived. Would you care to look at it, gentlemen?
What in the world?
Oh, now, you needn't guess. I'll lift the lid and... see.
Merciful heavens.
A pair of hands. The hands of your brother Cain.
Exactly.
I can't believe it.
But what is so strange about it, gentlemen? There are the ashes of a murder victim. Here are the unique and terrible hands that throttled him. Where in all the world will you find a collector who can boast such items as these?
You must be mad.
Morlock, did you plan all this from beginning to end?
Plan it, Mr. Smith? But how could I?
You're quite mad. We could never prove it.
You could prove nothing. Nothing.
Inspector, I think we'd better go.
Yes. Come on, let's get out of here before I do something I'd regret.
Call again any time, gentlemen. Easily upset, weren't they, Kane? Upset by your hands. Your great, strong hands that are going to become the prize items of my little collection. The distorted hands of a murderer. Ooh, how cold they are. And yet I can almost feel the murderous strength in them still. You wanted so bad that he closed your hands about my throat, didn't you, Kane? But it's too late now. You're dead, and your hands are dead, too. Lifeless. Would you like to see how your hands look at my throat here? I'll place them there for you. See how nicely they fit around my neck. Just as if they...
No! 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 Let go of me! Your hands... They're choking me. I can't breathe.
Morlock, what is it? Where are you?
Inspector, look. They're on the floor.
Good Lord. It's Morlock. And no. No, it can't be. His brother's hands are clutched around his throat. They've strangled him.
And that is the story of the hands of death as it is written in the sealed book. Edward Morlock was quite dead when they found him, with his brother's severed hands about his throat. but they called his death heart failure. For who would believe that two dead hands by themselves could wreak the vengeance that Cain Morlock swore to have before he died? And perhaps it was heart failure. Perhaps Edward Morlock, thinking he felt the hands move, died of sheer terror. You'll have to decide for yourself which is true. The answer is not written here. But the sound of the great gong tells me I must lock the book once again.
One moment, keeper of the book. What story from the sealed book will you tell us next time?
Next time? Are you sure you want to know? Perhaps my next story will be about you. For I have here all the stories that ever happened, and many that have not yet come to pass. But I'll find one for you in just a moment.
And now, keeper of the book, have you found the story that you'll tell us next time?
Yes, yes, I've found one. It's a story about a man who found the secret of immortality, of life everlasting, and how he tried to use it to make himself master of the earth. The title of the tale is The King of the World.
Be sure to be with us again next time when the great gong heralds another strange and exciting story from...
The Sealed Book.
The Sealed Book, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is produced and directed by Jock McGregor.
Wow, Lisa, there you go. That guy, that was creepy.
He's got a great... great
the Sealed Book.
Well, his laugh was actually appealing.
That's the guy who played the host on there, you know, with the creepy voice.
Yeah.
His name was Philip Clark, and for many years, he played Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons. But that is The Sealed Book with the Hand of Death from March 18th, 1945, originally aired on this very radio station way back in 1945. It aired at 2:30 in the afternoon. Weird time slot for that.
Yeah, well, we've got a better time slot
for it. Yeah, we do. On the next week's show, the title of the episode is The King of the World. You know who starred in that episode?
You?
Leonardo DiCaprio. He was the king of the world!
I thought it was you. Had it wrong.
We're going to go to break in a minute, but I want to remind all of our listeners that there are 5 classic radio shows waiting for you. They're yours free because you listen to the show. It's our thank you to you for listening to the WGN Radio Theater. Where can you go and get those 5 radio shows?
Go to our website, 100radioshows.com.
So the 100... radioshows.com.
That's it.
And what happens if I go there?
So here's the deal. Not only do we have 5 free shows completely free for you, and you can check those out and download those absolutely free, you can browse our selection of other shows that you can choose to purchase if you want to. And there we have 700 additional.
What is it?
Radio shows.
What, something's dripping on you?
Something just dropped on my head.
Something just dripped onto your head? She was in the middle of talking and something dropped onto her head.
I'm not sure what that was, but in any event.
It was the sealed book. It was the hand of death.
Oh, my gosh.
The sealed book.
Hopefully it's not raining in here. Anyways, we have 700 additional radio shows you can purchase while you're there.
Well, there's 7 collections and each one has 100 shows,
thus,
right?
700 mm-hmm. radio shows, plus the 5 that we're offering for free. So if you really are a great classic radio lover, you could go to 100radioshows.com and you could have 705 radio shows.
Wow, you're a mathematician.
That's
too.
That's a lot of radio.
Radio co-host and a mathematician.
Yep, I gotta
but
wear all
here's
hats.
Here's the best part about it, besides the free shows. If you use the promo code radio at checkout, Lisa, promo code radio at checkout.
That's the secret word.
You can radio. Save 70% off your order. So that's just a way to thank you for listening to the show. And I think you're going to love these. If you click on any one of the seven collections, you can read all that. You can look at all the different shows, 100 shows under each one, broadcast date, who stars in it, all that great stuff. And if you do purchase any of them, make sure to use the promo code radio at checkout. You'll see the price drop way down.
That's right. That's 70%. How we do it.
All right. When we come back from the break, we're gonna read some texts. So
right,
folks,
so, right,
text
I was gonna
in.
Say, we have a text in line. We haven't mentioned it tonight yet. 312-981-7200. We love getting your texts. We love hearing from you. And we want to ask you a question, and we are going to read the answers, your answers, when we come back.
Right, but so, do it right away because it's a short break.
I was going to say,
do it right now.
Okay. It's a short break. So our question to you is, what is your favorite scary movie? In light of the fact that we just played a great scary radio show,
right.
What's your favorite scary movie? We'll read some of the answers when we come back.
I have a couple of scary movies. Do I get to say mine or
you
no?
You sure do.
All right, we want to hear from our listeners. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back. There's a jingle, Lisa. You're a jingle person.
I'm a jingle gal.
She can do it. She can do a jingle.
That's a great jingle.
It's a great jingle.
They did a great job. I mean, they didn't ask me to do it, but if they did, I'm sure I would have done a great jingle.
So we don't have any more spots. We can talk all the way to the top of the hour, Ashley. Ashley's the best producer.
We're so happy to have you.
She's so great.
But not only are you a great producer, you're a lot of fun to hang out with.
Yeah.
There you go.
And she brings treats usually.
Did you bring treats?
Usually she does.
She didn't. She failed.
No treats today.
Oh, well. Yeah. All right, so then you only get a 9. you would have a 10 if you brought treats.
Yeah.
So we asked our wonderful listening audience, the smartest audience in all of radio, what their favorite scary movies are. Before we go to our text in line,
yeah.
And we'd love you to text in, folks. We'll have a few minutes to take your text. 312-981-7200. Your favorite scary movie. 312-981-7200. What is your favorite scary movie, Lisa?
I really like The Shining.
Oh.
That's a great movie. I'm a Jack Nicholson fan. He's fantastic. And when it came out, it was...
That's a Stephen King, right?
It's a Stephen King.
Yeah, I thought so.
And it came out in 1980, which I think was just the right time for me to appreciate that movie.
Right. You were born in 1980?
I was born back in the 40s.
Oh, were you?
So I was, you know, in my 40s by then. And
so The Shining, you know, I have to admit something.
Have you never seen it?
I don't think I've ever seen the movie.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
You know what? It's funny that we're talking about this. Just to sidetrack for a moment, I was watching my favorite show, This Is Us, mm-hmm. and there was a flashback where Jack was watching a movie, and it was The Shining, and mm-hmm. I went, oh, I love that movie.
The Shining. The Shining. I'll have to watch it. Is it really scary?
You know, it's scary. It's scary.
But
yeah.
It's Jack Nicholson.
But it's Jack Nicholson, and he makes it what it is. So.
I would have to say... I have two favorite scary movies.
I feel like
movies.
I know one of yours.
What is
it? Can I take a guess?
Yeah.
I think you like Silence of the Lambs.
No, that's not scary, really.
Yes, it is.
It's more of a detective. It's not really that scary.
Yeah, it's scary.
I mean,
it was
about...
Rosemary's Baby.
That's a good one. I would say my two favorite scary movies are The Ring. The Ring. That movie...
I'm sorry, I didn't see that.
...literally scared me to the point where I did not want to walk to my car. You know, I was at the movie theater, and I saw The Ring, and I was wanting to hire, a bodyguard to walk me to my car.
I didn't see that one.
That's how scary that movie was.
Wow.
The Ring. I was, literally freaking out. And then... I was much, much younger. This was in the late 70s. And I went to the movie theater with my friend Vince Lombardi, and we saw the movie The Exorcist.
Mm,
okay?
Okay, yeah.
And I'm telling you...
It's unforgettable.
I was a young kid, 1976. I was 13.
Right.
I mean, my mom's listening. What'd you let me see The Exorcist at age 13 for? It scarred me. That is a scary, scary movie.
Well,
saw it in a movie theater.
Right? How else would you have done it at age 13? There was no on-demand or Netflix.
I mean, really and truly, back in 1976 when that movie came out or whatever, 77, 78,
right.
It was completely, nothing had ever been done like that in the theater, right?
I'll have to see the ring, though.
Oh, the ring.
I haven't seen that one.
All right, so one of...
All right, I'm going to read some of the movies that our listeners texted in.
Yeah.
One of them said, The Haunting 1963.
The Haunting, yeah.
Because you never really get to see any ghosts or anything. It's all in your mind.
It's like a radio drama.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
This one said...
What's the
area
code?
That was a 440 area code. Okay. 815 said, I Know What You Did Last Summer was my favorite because it was realistic.
Yeah.
That was, that's a good one. Somebody from 98...
That's more like a slasher one.
Yeah. Somebody from 980 said, I saw The Omen when I was like 10, so they were
freaked out. Gregory Peck.
That's a great one. Somebody from 219 said, Let the Right One In. I don't know that one. 847 said, Psycho. Another.
The original Psycho movie. Yep. Let's just talk about this for a second. The original Psycho movie. With Janet Leigh and and Anthony Perkins, it really kind of started a whole thing. I mean, there was the sequels, there was the TV series, Bates Motel.
Oh yeah,
there was been a bunch of sequels, of course, and that was all based on a real guy, Ed Gein, in Wisconsin. Robert Bloch, who wrote the original novel Psycho, wrote. About, he changed the name of Ed Gein, but it really was based on this serial killer, Ed Gein. And then what happened was when Alfred Hitchcock read the book,
right?
He decided he wanted to make a movie. He had his assistant contact people from all across the country to buy up the books. He didn't want people to read the book. He wanted people to not know how it ended and things.
This is interesting. There are quite a few people that said The Exorcist, but this is a really interesting text. There was a text from 847 that I think it was a she. She said that, or could I guess it could be a he, that when he or she was...
Well, here's the thing. It's either a he or a she.
They. So these days, there's anything you want. Not necessarily.
Go ahead.
On TV, there was a show Sunday Night at the Movies, and my mom told us kids that we had to watch two movies because she found them not really scary, but suspenseful. One of them was Gaslight, and the other was Midnight Lace. I am a huge fan of Gaslight.
Yeah, that's a good...
That is a fantastic movie.
Yeah, that was a good movie. So that's a 1940s movie.
That movie, changed me. It just made me think. I think about that movie still. When you can't find something.
If you watch it again, would it change you back?
I don't know. Maybe I think I've been changed back for good. I always feel like easy to gaslight someone.
What were you like before?
Oh, I was great before. This just ruined me. I'm so sorry.
Couple more.
Sure. And a lot of Exorcist, House of 1000 Corpses.
Oh, yeah. That was a 50s movie,
917 area code. We've got Carrie from a 314 area code.
Yeah, that's a good one. Right. Oh, John Travolta in that movie.
Yeah, 708 area code said it because there's clowns.
Yeah, the new one, too.
Right, I didn't see the new one.
Oh, the new one was really scary.
Did you see that?
Yeah, saw them both. Yes, saw the original and the new one.
Clowns scare you. They are.
Clowns scare you. One more.
We've got... I'm sorry, I lost my place here. More exorcists.
Yeah. All right, in the next hour, we have The Shadow from 1939 with Bill Johnstone. Don't go away. I like Nostalgia Digest. I get it every single quarter. They send 4 issues a year, and I get it, and I'm like excited when I read it because it's always so good.
Yeah, those are great. I know we've got Steve Darnall in every so often to promote that.
Yeah, to talk about the Nostalgia Digest. Hey, you know what, Lisa? We're here every Saturday night, 10 p.m. till 3 o'clock in the morning, unless sports preempts us a little bit. We got preempted by 20 minutes or so. Now, next week, we are preempted at about an hour, so we start at 11 p.m. next week, and I think we're going to have Dan Jaffe in, and I believe he's going to give away 2-year-long coupons for Cat's Pride kitty litter. So, folks, if you don't have your photo of your kitty cat in yet, do that, right, Lisa?
I think I should enter. I could use a little bit.
You can't win.
I could.
Our listeners can win only. So send a photo of your kitty cat to catspridephoto@gmail.com. Make sure you give us your name and your cat's name and your city and state.
And it's not too late to enter for next Saturday night, so do it right away, and you will be entered into our Saturday night drawing.
Double the chance, because we're giving away 2 years' supplies.
2 years'
supplies. Is that how you
supplies.
Say it? 2 years' supplies?
No, but it's good.
All right. In this hour, The Shadow. I mean, is there another radio show that's like, you know, Mystery Detective that is more popular than The Shadow?
No, and this is a very early broadcast from 1939.
When I talk to people and they say, well, what do you do for? I say, well, I have a radio show. I play classic radio shows. Oh, you mean like The Shadow? People know The Shadow,
yep. You
know? And did you know that I'm the proud owner of the hat, cape, scarf, and ring worn by Alec Baldwin in the 1994 movie The Shadow? It's not a joke.
No, I know. I know that you have it. I don't know exactly how you acquired it,
I run around my house in it all the time.
So that's probably why you don't have any money, because you used it all to buy the paraphernalia.
I know. It's probably why I don't have any girlfriends either, because
you dress up with the cloak and
the cloak and the scarf and the ring, and I run around the house.
Right.
And I say, who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow knows.
Yeah, you sound like a lot of fun on a Friday night.
But you know, it's actually worn on screen. You know, it was what he wore. It says Alec inside there and everything.
You have Alec's sweat and everything in there.
I don't know, but it has the it has a certificate of authenticity from the production company, and the actual hat, scarf, red scarf, hat, black hat, black cape, red scarf, and a really cool ring. The ring is really cool.
Well, I've never seen you wear the ring.
Maybe I'll wear it this Halloween. Well, I don't really like
Halloween.
To wear it. I don't like to wear it because it's like all put away really nice.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I mean,
it's a collector item.
Yeah.
Yeah, good job.
If anybody out there is a collector, let me know. Because, I mean, you know, I don't even really know what I'm going to do with
it. Is it for sale?
No, I mean, I would sell it, of course. I mean, the right price. I mean, anything's for sale.
I know.
Right?
Right.
Even a lunch with you. If someone bid high enough, would you go to lunch with them?
Absolutely.
Right, of course.
I would go for nothing. Just take me out for lunch.
As long as they bought you a $10 Pellegrino, right?
Yeah, then I'll go.
All right. In this hour, The Shadow. So don't miss that. But first, these words.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
So this is our new segment, Just the Facts. We're going to be talking about facts, trivia, and historical events from 1939 this hour, because we will be playing a 1939 episode of The Shadow in a few minutes. So first of all, Carl, who was the president in 1939?
I'm going to guess, well, I would think Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
You are absolutely
FDR,
right.
Because we got into the war in 1941, and he was president in 41, so I'm guessing he was president in 39.
And you are correct.
Wow.
So if we go back to August 25th of 1939.
August 25th, 1939.
We had one of the greatest films released on that day.
Oh, okay. It would maybe be Gone with the Wind?
To Oz? To
oh,
Oz.
What's it about?
What wonderful memories this evokes.
1939 is probably the greatest year for movies, because you had Gone with the Wind, you had Of Mice and Men,
That's right. Wow, good job, Carl.
Yeah, this
so
movie,
the
of
Wizard
course,
of Oz was, of course, based on L. Frank Baum's novel, starring Judy Garland as Dorothy, and it premiered at Grauman's Chinese Theater in Hollywood. And in the original story, Dorothy wore silver slippers to protect her from the Wicked Witch of the West. Why was this changed to ruby slippers?
Probably
in the film?
Because on screen it looked like white slippers, so they
take advantage of the
color,
technicolor
sure.
process, so they became red. Exactly right. Also in 1939, the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum was officially dedicated in Cooperstown, New York.
Yeah.
In 1939, the New York Times predicted, now this is funny, that the television would fail because the average American family would not have enough time to sit around and watch it.
So,
I guess
they had, you know, already invented television by this time.
I know, but it wasn't that widespread quite
yet.
No,
39, of course not.
No.
I mean, nobody had TVs in 1939, but they had the technology. And
well,
so they were thinking,
predicted it would fail in 1939.
Well,
a little bit they did not know. And a world-changing event from that year, General Motors introduced the Hydramatic Drive, which is the first mass-produced fully automatic transmission. It was an option in 1940 model year of Oldsmobile automobiles.
Wow. So
if you had an Oldsmobile in 1940, you could have
the
Hydramatic Drive.
Hydramatic.
Sounds powerful.
This has the Hydramatic.
Exactly.
As opposed to the the stick shift.
Well, we're moving on to that. So,
wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Lisa.
Yeah, sure, Carl.
Some fun facts from 1939. I like that.
Yeah.
Our text in line 312-981-7200. We love getting your texts. Please do text us. Love hearing from our listeners. But it's time now for The Shadow. Do you know who was the first actor to play Lamont Cranston, alias The Shadow, Lisa?
I should know this.
Do you know?
The first one?
First actor to ever play. There were actors that played The Shadow, but not Lamont Cranston, alias The Shadow.
Was it Bill Johnstone?
No, he was the second.
He was the second one?
Yeah, Orson Welles was the first guy that played Lamont Cranston, alias The Shadow. And then Agnes Moorehead was radio's first Margot Lane.
Margot Lane or Endora.
Margot Lane, yeah. One of the most popular mystery detective shows of the golden age of radio, The Shadow. Even Ashley likes The Shadow. Right, Ashley? She likes The Shadow.
Yeah, you know it.
You know it.
Here's how it started, Lisa. There were these novels, you know, they were called dime novels. They were these thick novels that cost a dime, so that's why they called them dime novels. And there were these stories about the Shadow. Walter B. Gibson created the character, and it was just a narrator of stories. So, like, he would tell these different stories, murder mysteries, detective stories, and he was a guy known as the Shadow, right? And so then they said, well, let's put this on radio. These novels are selling like crazy. Let's put it on radio. So they had a guy. James Licurdo was the first guy to play The Shadow. And he, again, on the radio, was just sort of narrating stories. But then that became popular, and I thought, let's revamp this into a dramatized series where The Shadow is actually Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town, and he knows the secret of invisibility, can cloud your mind, and he fights crime as the Shadow. Nobody can see him. He's invisible. Of course, Margot Lane knows who he is. And then they cast Orson Welles as Lamont Cranston and Agnes Moorehead as the lovely Margot Lane. And then it became even more popular. He went on to do other things. There were other actors like Bill Johnstone, who is in this particular episode called The Mansion of Madness from November 5th, 1939. Uninterrupted now, here is The Shadow.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow knows.
The Shadow, mysterious character who furthers the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. The Shadow uses his hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the unseen voice of the Shadow belongs. Today's story, Mansion of Madness.
Is anybody home?
Well, you didn't expect there would be, did you, Lamont?
We did think we saw a light as we came up the road, Margot.
Well, then try again. What in the world is a medieval castle doing in this country, Lamont?
Oh, you know how castles get around. Well, I guess it's useless, Margot.
No one seems to... Well, at last. Come on, Mother. Well, how do you do? We,
You will please come this way.
Thank you. Come on, Margot.
Lamont, do you see what I hope I don't see?
Quiet, Margot. I hope you'll pardon our intruding on you here. We stalled down the road.
You will please be seated.
Yes. Yes, thank you. As I started to say, we were stalled down the road.
I will strike a light.
Thank you. Our car was so...
Now I will call the master.
Thank you. Margot, would you be interested in hearing how we were stalled down
the road? You will please be seated.
Nice, pleasant little man, wasn't he?
Did you see his face?
I saw half of it. It's all he has. One side is as flat as a coin. No eye, no ear.
Yes, I saw it plainly enough, Lamont. Look at this room. Those old tallow flambeaux on the walls. Everything seems so musty and old. Oh, Lamont, let's get out of here, can we? I don't like this.
Be careful, Margot. Someone's coming. Look, Margot.
Good evening. My man tells me you've had trouble with your car.
Yes, we were stuck in the mud up the road a bit. I know this is an awfully late hour.
Oh, no apologies, please. It isn't often that visitors come to Belhouden, even by accident. Permit me to introduce myself. I am Caldus Muddersall, uncle of Millicent Chantelford, present mistress of Belhouden Castle. On her behalf and on my own, I welcome you.
Thank you. Mr. Muddersall, Miss Margot Lane.
Charmed, Miss Lane.
How do you do? Mr. Cranston, Mr. Muddersall.
How do you do, sir?
Delighted, Mr. Cranston. May I ask in what way I can serve you?
Well, I'd like very much to use your telephone. I want to call a garage.
Telephone? We have no such thing here.
No telephone?
Nothing new has been put into this castle since it was built in 1640. Nearly 300 years ago.
300 years ago?
That's correct. Belhouden was built by Sir Austin Chancellor in this early 16th century. Would you step over here a moment, please?
Oh, yes. Yes. Come on, Lord.
Yes, Lamont.
This is a portrait of Sir Austin.
Hmm. Interesting-looking character.
He was forced to flee his native land because of political differences. He built this castle in the hope that he could create in this new land a replica of his ancestral estates.
And, did he find happiness?
Come here, to this window. Do you see that tower? It's a bit difficult, surrounded by mist as it is.
Right. I don't quite... Oh, yes, 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 I see it.
Sir Austin was found hanging by a rope from its rafters. Suicide.
Oh, how horrible.
There's a superstition that has clung to Belhouden ever since.
A superstition? About Sir Austin's death?
There are those who claim that the tragedies of Belhouden recur just as they happened originally, right down to the present day.
What was that?
Well, now pay no attention, Mr. Cranston. Don't be frightened, Miss Lane.
Oh, it's a girl. What's wrong with her?
Uncle!
Millicent! Go back to your apartment, child.
Millicent.
The mistress of Belhouden.
Uncle. It's here, Uncle. It's not in my imagination this time. It started in her dressing room. It moved across the east balcony and down the service stairs.
You know there's not been a cat in Belhouden since your mother passed on.
Only that one, Uncle. That one.
Now, Millicent, have you ever seen a cat here?
No. But I hear it, Uncle. Wailing just as it did when I found poor mother.
Oh, you know, come, my dear. You're frightening our guests. Miss Lane, Mr. Cranston, permit me to present Miss Millicent Chancellor.
Miss Chancellor.
My dear, we're intruding horribly.
Welcome to you both. I hope you won't think me ill-bred.
Oh, not at all, Miss Millicent.
Miss Lane and Mr. Cranston have had a bit of an accident. They came here for help.
An accident? Oh, my dear, you're not hurt?
Nothing serious, Miss Millicent. Our car is stuck in the mud. We were unable to go any further.
Then by all means, you must stay here tonight.
Well, that's very kind of you, Miss Millicent, but I think we'll push on to the nearest village.
I'm afraid that's not feasible. The nearest house is 10 miles away, well beyond the moor.
10 miles?
You couldn't attempt it in this storm. I see only one way out. You must permit us to offer the hospitality of Belhouden.
Why, that's very kind of you, but I think...
You're most welcome. I'll have my man prepare rooms for you. Well, it's very late, Millicent. You must be off to bed.
Yes, Uncle Caldus. I'm not afraid now that I know there are others in the castle. Good night, Miss Lane. Good night, Mr. Cranston.
Good night, Miss Millicent.
Good night.
I believe I owe you both an explanation. You see, the child had a frightful shock several years ago.
A shock?
Yes. Her mother was paralyzed during the latter years of her life. Being quite eccentric, she lived here alone, unattended. Millicent was at school in Europe. For many months, Millicent received no answer to her letters. So she came back to Valhouden and found her mother's skeleton in this room.
Oh, how awful.
Seated in a wheelchair, her only companion beside her, a cat.
Well, that explains this, the cat thing.
Oh, it explains many things, Mr. Cranston. The voices she hears, the departed Chancellor, too, in her distorted imagination, returned to Valhouden.
Oh, the poor girl.
Oh, I'm sure this all must be very trying to you both. I'll hurry Cebu along with your rooms. Make yourselves comfortable. I'll be back directly.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Well, Margot, not a pretty situation, is it?
Definitely not. What can we do, Lamont?
I'm not sure, Margot, but I'd like to stay. In fact, I must stay.
Why?
Well, Margot, it seems that many invisibles walk the halls of Valhouden. Tonight, there will be one other. The Shadow.
Who's there?
Don't be afraid, Miss Middleton. I mean no harm.
What do you want?
To help you, if help is possible. I'm a friend.
I don't recognize your voice. You say you're a friend. What's your name?
I have no name, really. I'm called the Shadow.
Shadow? I don't understand. Are you one of the visions?
No, not one of the visions. Please let me explain. I'm a living, breathing mortal, just like you. But I possess a hypnotic power through which I can create a mental mist that makes me invisible.
Then you're not one of them.
Them?
The Chancellfords. You're not Sir Austin or old Barton.
There's nothing supernatural about me, Miss Millicent. These Chancellfords you speak of, they're dead?
Oh, yes, but they come back. They come back to Valhouden with every change of the moon.
With every change of the moon? Have you seen them?
I've seen old Barton. Just as he was the night his Hindu servant threw the knife at his throat and killed him.
A Hindu servant, did
yes.
you say?
Why?
Oh, nothing. Tell me about old Barton. Who was he?
He was my grandfather, the last male in the Chancellford line.
You say he was killed?
Yes, it happened on the main staircase. Old Barton had just come from a hunt on the moors with his hounds.
Now, tell me exactly what it is you've seen.
His murder. Just as it happened 18 years ago. First, I hear his hounds howling out there on the moor. Then I hear his footsteps on the stairs. He climbs slowly to the first landing. Then he stops short. His hand goes to his throat. He makes a gurgling sound and turns and topples down the stairs.
Has anyone else seen this? Anybody but yourself?
No. And nobody believes me either. I don't suppose you do.
I believe you're sincere, Miss Millicent.
Everybody humors me like I was mad. Cebu was rude enough to smile when I told him about the vulture.
Vulture?
Oh, of course. You don't know about that. It perches in the tree just outside that window. It comes when old Barton does. Nothing I do will drive him away. It just sits there. Its hollow eyes staring at me, emitting horrible sounds.
You're positive you see all this, Miss Millicent? I mean, there could be no mistake.
Oh. There, you see, you doubt me also. You said you wanted to help me. How do you think you can?
I don't know. I'd hoped there might be a way, but frankly, I'm bewildered. I just don't know.
Lamont, will you please explain to me why we've been called to court?
I've told you, Margot. Mr. Montresor has asked us to testify to what we saw and heard that night at Valhouden Castle.
But why have we been waiting here all this time? Why can't we just go in and tell what we saw and get out of here?
Because the court isn't in session. They've declared a recess.
Recess? Oh, ridiculous. Schoolboy stuff. I'll bet you that if women were running these places, things would happen a lot faster than they do now.
Now, wait a minute. I seem to recall a few shopping trips with you, my dear.
Oh, well, that's different. And the people that hang around here, look at them. Pure criminal types, every one of them.
Well, who, for instance?
Well, that man who just came out of that room, for instance.
That man there?
Yes.
Darling, that's the judge.
Oh.
The court is reconvening. Let's go inside.
You have heard the testimony of Margot Lane and Lamont Cranston. Two unimpeachable witnesses.
Lamont, this is horrible. We've been summoned to this courtroom to help send that poor girl to an institution.
We couldn't help ourselves, Margot. We had to tell what we saw and heard at Valhutton that night.
Oh, poor Millicent. She looks so alone and deserted.
It is quite obvious that the defendant, Millicent Chancellford, is of unsound mind. The evidence proves that beyond a question of doubt. My client, Caldus Montresor, has exercised extreme patience in caring for this unfortunate girl. But now he feels that for her own good, she should be placed in an institution where she can receive proper professional attention.
That's not so. That's an infernal lie. Millicent's as sensible as anyone in this courtroom.
Quiet in the court.
Oh, Robert, my darling.
Silence. Young man, what is the meaning of this outburst?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, but I just couldn't sit here and listen to all these lies any longer.
If the court please.
Just a moment, Counselor. Young man, come up here.
Yes, sir.
Now, what is your connection with the defendant, Millicent Chancellford?
What? She's the girl I love. The girl I hope to marry. Until her uncle, Mr. Montresor, shut her away from me.
Your Honor, this boy is simply a disgruntled, rejected suitor. I demand...
Rejected by whom? By Millicent? All right, I'll show you how much of a rejected suitor I am. Millicent, Millicent, tell him you love me.
I do, Robert. I love you with all my heart.
There. There, you see, Judge?
Your Honor, I object to this display.
Judge, let me take Millicent away. Let me marry her and give her the protection and affection she deserves.
Young man, I wish the problem before the court could be settled that easily.
If it pleases the court, I would like to proceed with argument on the motion to put this girl in an institution.
It pleases the court to recess for 10 minutes. Perhaps we can resume in a more sedate atmosphere.
Everyone will stand up as the judge leaves the courtroom.
Margot, I have an idea, and I think it can be executed... by the shadow.
But, Shadow, whoever you are, this is an impossible thing you ask. I'd like to do it for you. Lord knows you've done enough for law and order. But I've got to hand down a decision. Sign the girl's commitment papers today.
Give me 2 days' time, Your Honor. Just 2 days' postponement.
But I just can't grant a postponement on nothing.
Your Honor, you've got to give me some time to accomplish my job.
Well...
Please, Your Honor.
I'll tell you what I'll do.
Yes?
I'm probably a sentimental old fool, but I'll give you 24 hours. If you're not back with something definite in that time, I'll have to commit the girl.
24 hours?
That's all.
Perhaps it would be sufficient. There's a change in the moon tonight.
Change in the moon... What in blazes has that to do with the case?
Maybe nothing, Your Honor. Maybe everything.
It's funny, Miss Lane, the way things change in just a few hours. Today, when you and Mr. Cranston were testifying, I was sure I could go on hating you both for the rest of my life.
We were in a bad spot, Robert.
Oh, I'll say. But I can see now just how Montresor made use of your visit to Belhouden. Why, it was the sort of a break he was looking for. Two prominent people like you to bear out his contention that Millicent was mad.
Nice fellow, that Montresor. He'd make a nice trophy for a hunting room.
Margo, you're incorrigible.
Well, say, we're getting near Belhouden. Don't you think we'd better go over what we're expected to do, Mr. Cranston?
There's not much to it, Robert. You and Miss Lane will wait in the car. I'll get into the castle somehow. And I'll open the side door under Millicent's apartment for you and Miss Lane. But we must move quickly before Montresor notices us.
Sounds simple the way you tell it, but how are you ever going to do it?
I'll let you in on a little secret, Robin. I do it all with mirrors.
I can hardly believe it, Robert. However did you manage to get in here without Uncle Caldus catching you?
Now, don't give me the credit, Millicent. Mr. Cranston did it. I don't know how, but he turned the trick.
Well, Mr. Cranston, the important thing is you and Miss Lane are here. And you've brought my darling. That's all that counts. Oh, Robert.
Darling, I don't know what we're going to do, but
What was that?
Listen.
Cat. It's here. It's starting again.
Now, don't be frightened, darling. You won't face it alone tonight.
There's a change in the moon. They'll all be here. Soon old Barton will be coming across the moors with his hounds.
But Cat is right here in the castle.
Oh, yes. It's in Mother's apartment off the east balcony.
Mr. Cranston, look. Look.
What is it, Robert?
There in the tree outside the window.
It's the vulture.
Vulture?
Yes, he's right close to the window. He's almost within reaching distance.
Robert, let me have that letter opener there on the desk.
All right, I'll get it for you.
What are you going to do, Lamont?
I'm going to try my hand at the gentle art of knife throwing.
Here you are, Mr. Cranston. This ought to do it. Sharp and heavy.
Yes, fine, Robert. All right. There. Step back, Margot.
Come over here, Millicent.
All right, Mr. Cranston, let her go. Oh, a bullseye. You stuck it right in his breast.
Yes. But still he sits and squawks. Interesting. Very interesting.
I could have told you. You can't get rid of him. There's nothing you can do. He always waits for old Barton's death.
Close the window, Robert. Shut him out.
No, wait. I hear something out on the moor. Now, you hear that?
It's the hound. They're moving across the moor. Old Barton's with him. He'll be here in a minute.
They're coming this way.
Oh, Robert. Robert.
It's all right, darling. It's all right.
I don't see how anyone could live in a place like this and still hold on to their sanity.
Others have reasoned that way, Margot.
You mean Montresor, I suppose.
I don't exclude him.
Mr. Cranston.
Yes?
I think I hear somebody moving about downstairs.
Yes? Margot, put out that flambeau. I'm going out in the hall. I don't want the light to stream through.
All right. There you are.
Now, quiet while I open the door.
Oh, wait a minute, Mr. Cranston. I'm going with you.
All right, Robert. Open up.
Be careful, Robert.
Easy, boy. Step through, Robert.
Right.
Now, close it. Follow me. Robert?
Yes?
Drop down behind this balustrade. We can see the stairs from here.
Mr. Crest?
Yes?
Look. Look, coming around that car.
Ah, that's our man. Now watch it.
Old Barton?
Maybe.
Can you see his face?
No. Cape hides it.
He's near the landing.
Be ready to run, Robert.
But what are we going
to
do?
Head him off before he can get to that big flagstone at the bottom of the stairs.
Look, he stopped on the landing.
Ready now?
That's exactly as Millicent described it. Old Barton chokes and then he falls down the stairs.
Come on, Robert. Stop! Stay where you are! Stop, I say!
Look out, Mr. Cranston. Grab him!
I got him! No use, mister. We're onto your hoax. Out of the way, Robert.
No, you don't.
There. You've got enough, Mr. Goldshot. Oh, no, eh?
You got him, Mr. Cranston. You nailed him right in the butt.
Robert.
Millicent, it's all right. Now, don't worry.
That was quick work. Who is he, Lamont?
I don't know, Margot. We'll see. Strike a match, Robert. I'll turn him over.
Sure. Boy, you should have seen that sock Mr. Cranston gave me.
All right, now, we'll see who
the half-faced man. Cebu.
Robert.
Yes, Mr. Cranston?
Take Millicent to her apartment. Margot, you come with me.
All right, Millicent, let's go.
Come on, Margot.
All right. Well, what's next?
I want to look at that vulture. Tree's right outside this door. All right, Margot. After you.
Thank you.
There's our charming feathered friend.
Still perched and still imperturbable. And still possessed of that confounded voice.
Margot, take a look at this.
What is it? A wire?
Yes. And if I'm not mistaken, it... Well, let's give it a yank and see what...
My, what a long tail he has. Long copper and properly insulated.
Hold on just a minute now. There we are, Margot. Mr. Vulture's innards. His heart, soul, and mind are all encased in this little device.
Looks like a radio loudspeaker.
That's exactly what it is.
I had no idea vultures were such deceitful creatures.
Margot, you take the car, drive to the village, and phone the police. Don't let them know who you are, but tell them to get out here right away.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to follow this wire. It'll probably lead to one of those abandoned guardhouses at the edge of the moor. Tell the police to watch for a flashlight signal. Then rush to the location and hold anybody they may find there. The shadow is going to find the human vulture at the other end of this line.
All right, Stevenson, the vulture once more. Longer this time. That's Cebu's signal to take it down and bring it in.
Okay, Montesor. Here goes.
Fine. We can disconnect that microphone now.
Don't you want me to do the hounds again?
Yes, yes, of course. Make it sound as if they're coming back across the moor. Go ahead, the speaker's open. What was that? Did you do that, Stevenson?
No. Came from over there by the door of the hut.
That laugh is not in Stevenson's repertoire of impersonations, Montesol.
Stevenson, what in thunder is this? You see anybody?
I'll answer for him, Montesol. He can't see me any more than you can.
Well, who are you?
I am the Shadow.
Shadow? Oh, yes, I've heard of you.
Quite an elaborate array of insanity-producing machinery you have here.
What do you mean? This is a simple portable broadcasting outfit. We're radio amateurs, that's all.
Hey, yeah, sure, that's all.
Amateurs at radio, but professionals at crime.
I'm afraid you're making a mistake.
You're the one who's made the mistake, Montesol. You made the mistake of thinking you could drive Millicent Chancellorfoot mad. Or at least make her believe herself mad.
This is ridiculous. I don't know what you're talking about.
Your denials don't interest me, Montesol. I'm only concerned with destroying your plan. Your control over Milton, not Chancellorfoot, and my fortune is at an end.
What's that?
A couple of automobiles coming along East Drive.
The police, Montesol, coming for you and your impersonating Confederate.
The police? Come on, Stevenson, run for it. Come on.
Run, Montesol, run to your doom.
Hold, hold, stop the wheel, soon.
The castle looks a lot different than it did the first time we came here, eh, Margot?
Hmm?
So glad those kids are getting married. She looks very lovely in that wedding gown, doesn't she?
Hmm.
Say, are you listening to me?
Yes. Yes, I was just thinking.
What about?
What would happen if you were ever married?
Now, Margot.
Oh, don't be alarmed, Lamont. This is pure supposition. I was just thinking of you walking up the aisle just as Robert is now.
Yes?
Ready to take the sacred vows that would endure for the rest of your life.
Yes, Margot.
And then all of a sudden, somebody would shoot the best man, the minister would fall down poisoned, and the bridesmaid would be stabbed, and you'd be off again on another case that would bust up the whole darn thing.
Today's program is based on a story copyrighted by the Shadow Magazine. All the characters and all the places named are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. The Shadow Magazine is on sale at your local newsstand.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
He was a very knowledgeable guy, you know?
Is that right?
Because the Shadow knows.
Kind of like you. You kind of know everything, too.
Yeah. I don't know everything.
Really?
I know a lot.
Yeah. About classic radio.
Yeah, it's about it, though. The Shadow right there. And you hear the studio audience in the back there?
Yeah.
They would give away tickets. You could go to the Shadow, the Mutual Broadcasting System, and watch this being broadcast live.
Yeah,
that was
sure
probably
that would be a, lot of
a real
fun.
Treat.
Yeah.
And it was on at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It wasn't a late night show, so there was a lot of younger audiences, and that's why it was such an appealing show. The Shadow of November 5th, 1939, Mansion of Madness with Bill Johnstone starring. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. You know, someone had texted in with the scary movie stuff.
Yes.
Rosemary's Baby.
Yes.
That was
scary.
That was a freaky, freaky movie.
So these are mostly movies that came out way back when.
Yeah.
I haven't really noticed too many current scary movies.
It, unless they were talking about the original.
I'm
It.
Not sure. I guess.
But I'll
which
tell you
one.
What. The new It that came out, very scary.
Did you like it scary?
Yeah.
Or you didn't like
good.
It scary?
It was good. I liked it. Yeah,
that's good.
But you know the interesting thing about Rosemary's Baby. I don't know if you know this story or not. But at the time, Mia Farrow was married to Frank Sinatra. Did you know this?
No.
Okay, she was married to Frank Sinatra. And it was sort of a, what do they call that, May, July marriage? Or what do they call it when it's like when he was a lot older than
right.
her? I forgot what they call that. But anyway, everyone kind of thought it was weird that they got married. You know, Frank was, I'm guessing, probably close to 60, and she was like in her late 20s, early 30s.
Right.
So it was sort of odd. But then he was about to star in a movie, right? He had a movie that he was producing coming up, and he wanted her to be in it. And she had said, you know, they were married, and she had said, yeah, I'll do this movie. And when is it starting? And he's like, well, it's starting whatever date it was, 6 months into the future. And she's like, fine, I'll be done with my movie. I just got cast in this movie, Rosemary's Baby. Right. And it'll be over. We'll be done. And then we'll go into your movie. So everything was great. Everything was wonderful, as yes. they say, right? But Frank had a little bit of a temper. You know, he was known for having a temper. And her movie went long. Her movie went overtime, which often happens when you're making a movie. So he's like, look, my movie starts next week. You better be done with this, you know, this little movie you're doing over here, you know? And she's like, Frank, I'm the star of this movie. I can't stop filming. He's like, I don't care what this Roman Polanski guy, you know, he was the one directing Rosemary's Baby. I don't care what he says. You better tell him that you better be wrapped by the time we do our movie, you know, this movie that we're doing. Well, she wasn't done. So guess what happened?
I don't know.
He sent her divorce papers on set.
So where did you
this
hear
is a
this
true story?
Where did you hear this story?
No, this is not a story. This is fact.
Well, my instinct tells me that may be true, but
it's true.
There has to be much more to the story.
Well,
than
I only have 3 minutes. I only
it
had
just
3 minutes.
Sounds so simplistic the way you've all wrapped it up.
Well,
but
I'm telling you that she received divorce papers while on set filming. Like the last couple weeks of Rosemary's Baby.
Well, I'm glad it was worth it because that was one great movie.
It was.
Yeah, it was a great movie.
That is a freaky movie, man.
Yeah, she was fantastic.
Yeah,
she was very young.
Well, I mean, she's a tremendous actress.
She was so young in that movie.
Yeah, so he was like, can't make my movie.
There's got to be more to that.
You're out of here.
There's more to that
you're
story. I just don't know
Ask
what it
Dave
is.
Dave Plyer. Dave's the expert. He has the Sinatra.
I believe you that happened, but I feel like there's more to that story.
It's Sinatra hours. Right, and I think that's on Sunday.
6:30 to 9 in the morning.
6:30 this morning. Coming up, 6:30.
Come on out. Hang out at WGN.
No, I mean, it's coming up at 6:30 this morning.
It is. That's 6.5 hours.
Don't miss it. It's really great. He'll tell you that's what really happened.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. In our next hour, we will be tuning in to one of really, truly the most realistic, you know, Dragnet was super realistic, right? And you listen to Dragnet, it really sounded like it was happening, right?
Yeah.
When they were doing the show. There was a show that was also on around the same time Dragnet was on called Broadway Is My Beat. And Larry Thor starred as New York police detective Danny Clover. This was set in Manhattan, and he was solving crimes. But it was very realistic, really cool, great music, produced by Elliot Lewis, who was one of the best producers. He's produced Suspense and, you know, crime classics, a lot of great shows. So that's coming up. After that, Dimension X, good sci-fi adventure from 1950. And then in our last hour, we will tune into Nick Carter, Master Detective. So still a lot of classic radio coming your way. And we have a text in line, 312-981-7200.
And so just to let you know, one of our texters let us know it's a May-December romance.
Ah, May-December.
I knew it was
Thank
2 months
you.
And I wasn't sure what they
Thank
were either.
Thank you. Thank you. May-December romance. Yeah. All right. Stick around. Broadway Is My Beat coming up next. Speaking of driving and being nervous driving and stuff like that, Ashley, have you ever been in a car when you're driving and Lisa's a passenger? Has that ever happened to you?
No.
Has this unfortunate situation ever happened to you?
It wouldn't be unfortunate for me.
Have you ever been driving and Lisa's a passenger in the car? Well, this happens to happen to me twice every Saturday. I drive here with her and drive home.
You're
lucky. Drop her off to her car.
There's a lot of people that would like to be in the car
and
with me.
Let me tell you
something. Spend some time talking.
It is quite.
Could you get the words out?
No, I actually can't.
You
I can't think
describe
of.
It?
I can't think of the words to describe. Every little thing. I mean, you know, like 40 car lengths up, if a person hits the brake, 40 car lengths. She's like, Carl.
He's obviously being. He's clearly being dramatic. The bottom line here, Ashley, is he drives fast.
Carl? No, I don't drive fast. I drive the speed limit.
You have a lead foot.
No, but, not at
but
all.
But when the cars in front of him are braking,
Carl,
you need to plan ahead.
Carl!
Not like get to the car and then brake. It's just a driving style.
You are a terrible passenger. You know what? You know, when I'm at home, let me tell you this, Ashley. When I want to go to sleep at home, I have a mask, you know, the eye mask. You know?
You
I'm thinking
don't.
Of bringing it for Lisa. Put the eye mask on. Just get in the car.
You're going to blindfold
me now?
Put
the eye mask on.
You want to put me in the car and blindfold
listen,
me?
Listen, it'll be safer for you because you make me nervous.
I think that's called kidnapping.
No, but if you put the blinder on.
Right? I don't understand. Carl, explain it to me.
You wouldn't see what's going on around you.
I'm trying to protect
fine.
Myself.
You'd be fine. It's something, man. Let me tell you.
He's something, all right.
Wow.
Wow.
Man.
Lost for words. That's a first.
Broadway is my beat.
Yep.
Is in this hour. Yeah. Good yeah. Detective adventure. 1951. That's coming your way. Still, we have like three more classic radio shows still. Broadway's My Beat, Dimension X, which is great sci-fi fun, and then another detective adventure with Nick Carter, Master Detective. So stick around. We will have Broadway is My Beat right after these words. This will get your attention, huh? That
music? Oh, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen. The story you're about to hear is true.
Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
So we are going to do just that. We're going to talk about just the facts from 1951, which is the year of our radio show this hour, Broadway is My Beat.
Yes.
So in 1951, we had a very special song that hit the charts at number two that year. Do you have any guesses as to what it might be?
Gosh, 1951.
It's really an
probably maybe
it's an
Elvis?
Unforgettable song.
Maybe an Elvis tune?
Unforgettable.
Oh.
I gave it to you.
Nat King Cole.
You didn't bite.
That's what you are.
I don't bite.
Is that right?
No, I don't bite.
Unforgettable.
Number two on the charts, 1951.
So who's a better singer, Nat King Cole or me?
Well, let me hear a little more from you, and then I'll have to decide. Go ahead.
Like a song of love that clings to me.
I need more, Carl.
How the thought of you does things to me.
How it does things to me.
Never before. Has someone
it helps if you know the words.
I don't know the words.
I'm picking up on that.
Unforgettable.
I feel like you're...
In every way.
I feel like if you knew the words, you would be just as good.
Unforgettable.
There, see?
And forevermore. And forevermore.
Yeah, you're just like a beat behind, but otherwise you're really, really good. So that was 1951.
You're going to beat my behind?
That's what I said.
Oh.
That's because you don't bite, so I'm okay with that.
Don't beat me out behind.
The number two, the first baseball game is televised in color.
Wow.
And it's between what teams?
Kansas City Royals and Cleveland Indians.
Yep.
Yeah, right, sure.
No, it's between the Brooklyn Dodgers and the Boston Braves.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
RCA introduces the first portable video camera. It weighs 8 pounds. Isn't that funny?
Don't need to work out. You just carry that around.
Yeah, exactly. And Marlon Brando blows everyone away in the Pulitzer Prize-winning play and Academy Award-winning motion picture.
It's a play?
It is. It's based on a play.
Don't tell me.
I'm not. It's based on a play by Tennessee Williams.
Okay, I think I know it.
Okay.
He's a fighter, right? He's a fighter. What the heck is... on the waterfront.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's not on the waterfront.
Blanche.
Huh?
Blanche DuBois.
I don't know.
Based on the play by Tennessee Williams.
I don't know.
Released September 18th, 1951. A Streetcar Named Desire.
A Streetcar Named Desire.
It's
yeah.
so
That's
close.
The one I was talking about. Stella. No, that's a different one, right? No, he's like, I could have been a contender. That's the one where he says.
That's not a Streetcar Named Desire.
Oh, isn't it?
No.
No?
That's not.
I mean, am I getting my Marlon Brando movies all mixed up?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Speaking of Marlon Brando movies, I just watched The Godfather again for like the 30th or 40th time. He is so great in that movie, right?
Oh,
everybody's
great
in it.
Oh, yeah.
Al Pacino is amazing in it. Godfather. They just played it again on, I think, on AMC, and I watched the whole thing again just because nobody dates me. So,
right, so you've got nothing else to do.
Well, I mean, I'm home on a Friday night, so I watched the, you know, nobody wants to date me, so I watched AMC.
Did you mention that nobody
Godfather.
Wanted to date you? I'm not sure I heard it. What did you say?
Well, because nobody dates me.
Right. I think
I
you got that 4 times
the
now.
The Godfather for the 30th time.
Gotcha.
Better than
all right,
nothing.
Well, at least you've got things to do to keep you busy on a Friday night.
Yeah.
Right? What would you do without, you know, the advent of television?
Thankfully, television.
Of course, you had classic
Listen
radio
to more
before
classic
that.
Classic radio.
Right. Oh, and I forgot to ask you, of course, in 1951, the president was...
Was it Truman?
It was.
Yeah.
Still Truman.
Wow, still Truman.
Yep. All right, well, we
thanks,
can look
Lisa.
Forward to your
Great
welcome.
Great stuff. I
yeah,
like it. It's
a lot
very
of fun.
Educational.
Good. I'm glad
you know?
I could educate
I mean, like,
you.
You were a teacher for a while, right?
I still am a teacher.
You were a language teacher or a English teacher or something.
I'm a reading teacher.
A reading teacher. I was close.
But, you know,
Mom,
I,
so
taught, I taught college, so I taught some advertising and business and psychology in college.
Man.
To college
you're
students.
You're like an egghead. You're
right?
Very smart.
Well,
she's so smart.
I didn't teach history,
Wolf,
so
isn't
this,
she?
Yeah, the history I'll have to do, you know, it takes a little time and research, but
12, 13 master's degrees.
You know, they add up and they serve me well here on
right.
the radio.
Can I have one or two of them?
You
just,
can. Everything
put
is,
them on my wall.
Like you said earlier, everything's for sale.
Right.
It has
true.
A price.
All right. Well, it's time for Broadway Is My Beat. Oh, I like this series. You know, it came to radio in 1949 and lasted till 1954. Good detective series. Originally, Anthony Ross starred as Detective Danny Clover, but that was only for a few episodes. They then recast Larry Thor as Times Square private detective Danny Clover. And each episode opened to the music, I'll Take Manhattan, because it was set in Manhattan. So they pulled a song that was... true to that town. Clover worked homicide from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. That's how he said it, pretty much.
Just like that.
A little bit better than I just did it. Charles Calvert was Sergeant Gino Tartaglia, and Jack Crucian was Sergeant Mugovan. You're going to like this. It's very realistic. June 30th, 1951, the Pablo Molari murder. Larry Thor stars uninterrupted now. Here's Broadway Is My Beat.
Broadway's My Beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
In the time before dawn, Broadway is an island of silence torn from the blazing neon, the midnight sun of the spectaculars. The river mists mingle with the vapors rising from manhole covers. Through them move the rejects, the stragglers, the wanderers, the men without sleep. One detaches himself, scavenges in a trash bin choked with the remnants of night, finds nothing, moves on to the next. It's the time of the endless search, the restlessness of an anguish you can't understand, on the street built for the purpose. You walk it, and a shadow whimpers, and you hurry on, close your heart to it, because the whimper was yours. Finally, you must put aside whatever it was you were looking for, because on a side street, a man waits for you to give you the nighttime's departing gift. The boy lying dead against the iron gate of the tenement's basement court.
Pablo Molari, Danny, from uptown, west 109th Street. Carried one of those handwritten identification cards.
Find anything else on him?
Not much. $5 bill in his wallet. His saint's medallion he's wearing on a chain around his neck. That's about all.
Now, you question the people in the...
Yeah, Danny, every door. No one ever heard of the kid, had nothing to do with him, didn't want to talk about him. You know, most of them were trying to sleep, the heat, the kid squalling, you know.
Yeah.
beaten, jaw broken. This bruise on his throat...
must be the one that killed him. Hey, come down here, Danny.
Huh? What?
Take a look at the sign on this door. Hudson Club, Johnny Hammett, president. I guess it's one of those street clubs the kids make up for themselves. This neighborhood's loaded with them.
You think what happened to this kid is part of it?
Yeah, I think. What do you think?
Maybe. Check it, Muggerman. I'll get back to you. And wait now for the decent hour. Give to someone a few more hours of sleep before breaking the news about the death of a young man. And at 8:30, to an address on West 109th Street. Climb four flights and be careful of the rotting steps and the three-year-olds at play. The door opens to your knock, and the woman who pinches her shawl close to her throat doesn't understand what you're saying, and calls a neighbor who understands, who explains to the woman, the mother of a murdered young man, explains what must be done. Accept the fact of death. Identify the body. Bury her son. Then walk away from all of it. You've started a new day. Call headquarters. Detective Muggerman gives you an address. Looked for and found and checked by the night shift. Johnny Hammett, president of the Hudson Club, a tenement on West 43rd near the docks. Johnny's glad for the company.
I dislike having my coffee alone, Mr. Clover.
You work, Johnny?
Yeah, here and there. Mostly on Broadway, sir. People always want things done.
You mean you run errands?
No, if you think all it is running down to the corner drugstore, no. Broadway, Mr. Clover. It's full of tourists.
Anybody else live here with you?
Yeah, my father. I think he still does. Hardly ever see him.
How's the Hudson Club coming along?
Oh, fine. Fine, thank you.
What kind of club is it?
Oh, a little bit of everything. Sports, dances, beach parties. The girls do most of the arranging.
Girls?
Isn't that funny? About a month ago, I mentioned girls to my father. He had the same expression on his face as you do. Yeah, girls. I'm 19. I don't chalk walls anymore.
Johnny, a member of your club was murdered last night. A boy by the name of Pablo Malari.
Oh, is he dead? Nah, he wasn't a member of the club, sir. He just hung around.
What about him, Johnny? Who killed him?
I didn't. And no one's come up to me since last night and said he did it either.
Where were you last night?
We had a meeting at the club. A special one. Initiations. Plans for the summer. Broke up about 2. I came right home.
I want a list of your members, Johnny. Names, addresses.
No, sure. Before you go. Look, where was Pablo found?
Outside your club, in the vestibule.
Nelson might know.
Nelson?
Toby Nelson. We had him in front of the door last night to keep away undesirables.
Where can I find him?
Works at a cigar and magazine counter in the Flick Building lobby. I wish there was more I could tell you. I really do, sir.
Sis, don't forget your change. There you are, baby. Good luck at the track. What's yours, Buster?
Your name, Toby Nelson.
Someone send you to ask an important question?
Police.
That buzzer could stand a little metal polish, mister.
Don't worry about it.
Oh, sure not. Tell me what I should worry about.
About a boy named Pablo Malari.
Yeah, I've been reading him in the newspapers. What's he to me?
He was found beaten to death in front
of... Hudson Club, I know. It says so in the papers.
What went on there last night?
I'll have to read the minutes of the meeting. I was outside making these 2 big muscles that Tatsu wanted in and couldn't get in.
What happens at these initiations, Toby?
Kid stuff. You swear to do this and that and be a nice Hudson. To tell you the truth, I was embarrassed for the kid.
Who are you talking about?
Paula. Paula got taken into us last night. Johnny Hammett wanted it, so I arranged it. Paula Chopak. Which makes us fellow members. Which makes me happy, happy.
This Paula's your girl.
Manicures my pinkies. Look, pretty job, huh? Gives me locks of hair. Knits me argyles. Oh, it's a nice thing we got. Tender.
Paula Chopak. Uh-huh. I've got her name on my list.
She was on top of the grocery store, corner 11th Avenue and 46th.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Toby.
Anytime. Oh, here, take a scratch sheet, mister. For free. Go ahead, take it. It's last Monday's.
And bring to the top of the list Paula Chopak. Climb the stairs, knock on a door with the curtain panels of glass, and hear the furtive scurrying behind it and the slam of another door inside. Then hear a woman's steps approaching, and an instant of silence, then the fumbling with the catch, and the door opens. And the woman had not finished making herself presentable to the caller. The wrinkled cotton house dress needed another smoothing. The graying hair needed to be pressed back again from the forehead. The tired voice, there was nothing to be done about that.
Yes, something.
I'm from the police, Danny Clover.
It's good you're here. We not think police come so soon. Please to come in. Please, that chair. I sit by window in it by evening. It's comfortable, clean. You be cool. Please, mister.
Thank you, but I'd like to...
By my daughter to speak. By Paula.
Paula, is she here?
Yes. By room, listening to records. But first, please, mister, first.
You want to tell me something, Mrs. Chopek?
About Paula. You see what I am, mister. But Paula, by whorish great beauty, by the face, by the rich black hair.
Mrs. Chopek.
Like crown she wears it, my Paula, my baby. I comb for her, brush, wash, put in braids by night for sleep. My Paula is good, clean, respectful to me, to such as you, never trouble, never bring me tears.
Will you call her, please?
Go to her. She wait for you. She say me, policeman come this afternoon. I have much thing to tell him. My Paula say this to me. What my Paula got to say to policeman, mister? What?
In that room?
Yes. You see, my Paula tell you her thing. Then you, policeman, go away from us. Huh, mister?
Paula, I'm from the police.
I know. I heard.
Your mother said you had something you want to tell me.
Mom's wrong.
I don't think so. Tell me, Paula.
Mom can hardly speak English. Sometimes she doesn't understand the things I say to her. I've got nothing for you. Besides, I'm busy.
Brushing your hair? Let it alone for a while, Paula. Talk to me. The boy was murdered last night in front of a club where you were initiated. Pablo Molari. Is that what you wanted to tell me about? What's the matter, Paula? Scared?
Look at me. You think you could scare me?
Toby Nelson talked to me. He said...
He told you I was sweet to him, maybe. Told you I joined the Hudsons because he asked me. Because I used to jump when he asked. That he told you?
That, too.
Well, next time you see him, explain to him it's finished. Through, wiped off my memory book. As of last night.
What happened last night?
I got initiated in the club. What else can happen to a girl?
Murder, maybe? A murder she saw being committed, maybe something she's afraid
of. I said it once. I got nothing to tell you. So go tell Mom I got nothing to say to a policeman. It'll cheer her up.
I hope you're right, Paula. For you. For your mother. I hope you're right.
Danny? I give you the evening's greetings.
Thanks a lot, Gino.
You're here so late tonight. Why didn't you go home after you saw the Chopek girl?
I had some work to do.
Uh-huh. Danny, would you mind very much if I regaled you with a tidbit that happened early this evening at the house of Tartaglia?
Please do.
Cousin Stanley from Gay Paris showed up after 10 these many years.
Not him.
Oh, him it was. And with arms akimbo with goodies. Nicks for Mrs. Tartaglia, knacks for the kiddies, and for me... A great big bottle.
Champagne, huh?
Had a call, Danny. 51.
From Paris?
Those Continentals know how to live.
Gino, did you have that list of the Hudson Club checked?
Indeed I did. And each and every member swears on the bylaws of the club that they know nothing of the murder of Pablo Molari.
Danny Clover speaking.
Squad car's downstairs for you, Danny. Paula Chopek was washed up on the beach at Far Rockaway a little while ago. Maybe an accident, maybe homicide. You going, Danny?
Right away. The night wind off the sea was soft, warm. It sighed against the flames of the beach fire strung along the coast, riffled the sand across driftwood, across the litter. It brought close the far-off sounds of a summer beach at night, the laughter from behind screen porches, the siren call of the ukulele gently strummed, the distant screeching of gulls, and closer, the other sounds, the lash and wash of the surf, the opening and setting up and adjusting of the mechanical devices that attend the dead, and then the trembling voice of the boy who tries to tell you about the girl lying there, how it was, why it was.
We were swimming, sir. Lost her someplace out there in the dark, and I heard her kind of scream.
Just you and Paula, Johnny?
Yeah, it was a beach party, like the ones I told you about. The other members left. Paula wanted to stay. Asked me to stay with her.
You said she screamed. Why?
She hit her head on one of those rocks out there. The high tide covers them up. I didn't know till I hit the beach she was dead. I tried to... Dead? She is, isn't she? Look at me. I killed Paula.
You are listening to Broadway's My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
On an early summer's night, Broadway stands on a corner, leans against the orange juice stand, and sums up the day. Some days are better than others. Some days you break even. You only had one end of the daily double, but the new blonde in the office looked over her shoulder at you and smiled. And later, when she dabbed on her lipstick with a finger, she smiled again. Oh, it was quite a day today. The Dodgers passed a miracle. You forgot to pay the check at the cafeteria and got away with it. And a girl. A song of a girl was washed up on the beach at Far Rockaway. Here is maybe a tragic day, but here is a day. It was 11:30 toward the end of it when we got Johnny Hammett back to headquarters.
Sit down there, Johnny. Cigarette, kid?
No. No, thank you.
Well, maybe you'd rather have one of Danny's.
Yeah, here. Here, have one, Johnny.
I don't want one.
I guess Johnny doesn't like the brands we smoke, Danny.
I just don't want to smoke, that's all. Can a man not want to smoke?
Take it easy.
Sure. Sure, relax, kid.
Am I under arrest?
You said you killed Paula.
It was my fault. I shouldn't have let her swim out that far.
Did you kill her or didn't you kill her?
It was my fault.
Who killed Pablo Malari?
You think I did?
Did you, Johnny?
You think I killed him, don't you, Mr. Clover?
There you go again, Johnny. Look, kid. A couple of your friends were killed. We're police. We're asking.
I didn't kill anybody.
You don't have to explain to Johnny Muggerman. He knows why he's here. He knows we need his help.
Yeah, help, Johnny. That's what we want. We're not asking for a confession.
Who's kidding? Who?
Were you in love with Paula?
She wasn't around long enough.
She was around tonight. What happened tonight?
You know what happened. What's the matter with you?
Look, Johnny, I'm going to tell you something. You're not talking to your little hoodlum friends. You're talking to a policeman. Nobody's trying to intimidate you. Nobody's trying to make you say things you don't want to say. You're talking to a policeman that's trying to do his job. What happened tonight?
We had a beach party.
The Hudsons?
Yes, sir.
That's better, Johnny.
Paul and I came late. The others were already there.
Toby Nelson?
Yes, sir. Toby wanted to take Paula home. Paula wanted to stay. So we stayed. Paula and I. We were the last ones there.
What made Paula want to stay?
She'd never been swimming at night.
And she swam out past the breakers and a wave washed her against a rock. Is that what happened?
Yes, sir.
All right, Johnny.
Can I go now?
Uh-huh. Good night, Johnny. Thanks. What do you think, Muggerman?
You believe him?
I don't know. I'm going to check. I'm going to talk to Toby. Toby? Toby?
Who wants me?
You've got a long nose, mister.
Your landlady told me you were up here on the roof.
Hers is even longer than yours. What's a guy have to do to get a square foot of air to himself?
Your girl's dead, Toby. Paula's dead.
You're stale, mister. The smooth voices on the radio have been telling me Paula's dead. For an hour now. Up here, I thought I couldn't hear him. I hear.
Johnny Hammett says it was an accident.
That makes it an accident.
You were at the beach party, Toby?
Never miss it. Gives me a chance to show off my muscles to the members.
You did that. Then what happened?
Well, let me think now. After that, I roasted the hot dogs for the group. We all ate hearty, then it broke up. I came home.
And left Paula alone with Johnny?
Yeah, that's the other thing I did.
Paula was your girl. How come Johnny took her to the party?
If she was alive, you could ask her. I wouldn't know.
Johnny says you wanted to take her home. Why didn't you?
Because she slapped me across the mouth when I asked her. They all laughed. Johnny, too. Then she laughed harder than anybody. That's how I got the message. She didn't want me to take her home. She wanted Johnny.
Up to the night of the initiation at the Hudson Club, she was your girl. What happened there to make her turn on you, Toby?
She's dead. Paula's dead. What else do you want from me? What else do I have to give you? How much can you... She's dead, mister. That's all I got.
All right, Toby. And leave the boy alone. Give him the time and place of his grieving and the quality of it that's bled out of a tenement rooftop in a city stretching into the hours after midnight. Go away. Resign yourself that another day is over. The next morning and the legwork. Go now to a corner of the city where the sign says 11th Avenue and 46th. Climb the steps and stop at a door. Intrude upon two rooms newly filled with grieving.
Please come in. Of my daughter?
Mrs. Chopak, the police are not satisfied that Paula...
Of my daughter, Paula?
There's a possibility that it wasn't an accident.
Paula is in another room. The others, neighbors by me. We have only boxes to sit on.
I want you to try to understand what I'm saying.
Nothing. Nothing I understand. Only up to yesterday. To yesterday when Paula said to me, Mama, I'm going to swim with this boy, this Johnny.
Johnny Hammett?
Johnny.
He called for her?
At first, my Paula, she said she would want to stay home, rather. Then the boy said something to her. Bent down low over her ear. Paula took her suit for swimming, her cap not to get her hair wet. Then she said what I said to you.
I see. Just one more thing, Mrs. Chopak. The night before last, your daughter went out. Do you know where she went?
To some place. To party. My club has party.
What time did she come home?
Late. I don't know what time.
Did you talk to her when she came home?
Only when I tried to give her help.
Help?
White. Like ghost. I'm sick. I hear this. I get out of my bed. I come to her. I say... Paula, you're sick. Mama, get something. She tell me, go away. Like I'm someone she never see before.
Was she drunk?
Sick. It was no whiskey. I smell sick. White. Sick like ghost.
I see.
She's dead now, Paula is. And the neighbors by me. They're in next room. They sit. They cry. They touch my shoulder. They don't talk. They don't know what words to say to me.
Then walk the tenement street and have your passage greeted by the sudden silences of the yelling kids, the turning of backs after the furtive gesture of insult, because somehow you were guilty of that anguish over the corner grocery store. Once you had been welcomed by a mother, and for that you had left her a dead child. And on that street, the guilt was yours. So I got away from it. At headquarters, reread the file on Mullary, dead of a beating. On Paula Chopak, dead of a head wound while swimming at Rockaway. And finally, read away the daylight and sit in darkness till a man comes in, looks at you for a moment, turns on a light.
You don't mind the light, huh, Danny?
It's all right, Gino, thanks.
And I agree with you that this killing, this dying of kids, makes one wish to sit alone in the dark. However...
You Got something for me, Gino?
Danny, all I can give you is a comment upon the children of today. The clubs they must make for themselves. The things they do in said clubs. The hurt they bring upon themselves for so doing.
Go on, Gino.
It's in all the papers, Danny. How they go out of the way for new thrills, new sensations, new emotions. Only this morning, while shaving, I was bending an ear to the comment from the radio. I called in the Tartaglia
crowd. You got something, Muggerman?
I don't know, Danny. Maybe yes, maybe no.
What?
Gordon and Technical gave it to me to give to you. See if the big man can figure it, he says to me. I got news about Gordon. I actively dislike
him. What did he give you?
He's been studying the bathing cap Paula Chopak wore to the beach party. He says it's curious.
Why?
He says the girl didn't have the cap on when she went into the water.
Paula was proud of her hair. She'd have worn the cap. Why does he say she wasn't wearing it?
Because there was no blood stain inside it. Gordon says if she was wearing the cap when she hit the rock, it would have held some of the blood. Which means, he says, that the cap was put on her after she was carried to the beach.
It means another thing, Muggerman.
What?
Paula was murdered. Get me a squad car.
Go away, we're not open.
It's the police.
What do you want?
Let's go inside, I'll tell you. Inside, Toby. Are you the only Hudson here?
Hey, Johnny, look what's here. We got a caller, Johnny.
Good evening, Mr. Clover.
Nice clubhouse you've got here.
Can I show you around?
Where's everybody? I thought you had quite an organization.
They'll be around. When you leave, people will start swarming in here.
I'm glad you came, Mr. Clover.
Thanks.
Hey, what's with you, Johnny? You buy a cop for a friend?
Don't pay any attention to him, sir. He doesn't know about policemen. He doesn't know they have a job to do.
You understand all about that, though, don't you?
Hey, what's going on?
Too bad about you, Toby.
Huh?
I said too bad about you. Your muscles, your temper. The mad you had on the other night.
Hey, Johnny, what's eating you?
You never saw Toby work over a guy, did you, Mr. Clover?
No. Tell me about it.
Once a boy tried to get in here. Tried real hard. Toby was in front of the door. The boy never made it.
Pablo Molari?
Johnny.
It wasn't premeditated, Mr. Clover. Toby didn't mean it. He was just angry about something.
You're under arrest, Toby. Put out your hands.
Gotta do something first!
Don't be a fool!
Take him off me!
Take him off! Thanks. Thanks, Mr. Clover. That's just the way he went after that boy. He would have killed me.
Toby will rest a while.
What are you doing, Mr. Clover?
Frisking him. Nice cigarette case. Cigarette, Johnny?
Are you kidding? I don't smoke those.
Don't blame you. Marijuana brings you grief. That's what it brought Paula.
Paula?
Uh-huh. Paula was a sick girl after she got home from her initiation. You have to smoke this stuff to become a member of your club?
Oh, now look.
You look, Johnny. Paula was Toby's girl. You wanted her. That's why you insisted she become a member. Put her on this stuff, she'd lose her sense of values.
You think I'd do anything like that?
Yes, I do.
You know me better than that.
I know you killed her.
I told you what happened out there on the beach.
You forgot to tell me why she went there with you. What were you going to do, Johnny? Tell her mother she was smoking marijuana? Is that why she went with you, stayed at the beach after the others left?
I don't know what to say to you, Mr. Clover. You're wrong. And I think you ought to take care of Toby here.
Paula had beautiful hair, Johnny.
I'd go along with that.
She'd have worn her cap into the water. You killed her before she went into the water. How, Johnny? With the rock?
Mr. Clover.
Then you threw her in the surf, saw her suit to be wet, pulled her back, remembered about the cap, put it on her. Why did you murder her?
She was so beautiful. She was so beautiful, Mr. Clover.
She refused more of your cigarettes?
Funny. It worked before.
Let's go, Johnny.
It always worked. You know, it got so they'd come around here begging for the stuff. A young man like me, connections. It's like a king. I'll tell you another funny thing. I wouldn't touch this stuff.
Come on.
Yes, sir.
Broadway looks clean. The winds of the evening have swept away the litter. Everything looks sharp. Sharp. Like a knife at your heart. You walk against it, and it plunges deeper. Deeper until there's no pain at all. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway, my beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia and Jack Crucian as Mugovan. The program was produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with musical score composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. In tonight's story, Dick Crenna was heard as Johnny Hammett, Bill Tracy as Toby Nelson, Peggy Weber as Mrs. Chopat, and Michael Ann Barrett as Paula Chopat. Bill Anders speaking. This is CBS, where Phil Regan brings you the Serviceman's Own Show every Sunday on the Columbia Broadcasting System.
All right, Broadway is My Beat. June 30th, 1951, the Pablo Molari murder. Larry Thor in there. Elliot Lewis, who played Frankie Remley on the Phil Harrison Ellis Faye show. He was the producer-director of that. Elliot Lewis, although he was a great actor, great comedian, he was on Phil Harris for so long, he liked to work behind the scenes. He was a writer, producer, director. He produced Suspense for a while. Broadway is My Beat, this series. He was the producer on Crime Classics, a lot of different shows, but very talented producer. Our good friend Peggy Weber in this broadcast, Lisa, she's been on this show before. Hope you enjoyed Broadway is My Beat. We have a lot more classic radio all the way to 3 o'clock in the morning, so stay with us. First, these words.
Join Carl and me for an exciting Bermuda getaway aboard Oceana Cruises, the world's leading culinary and destination-focused cruise line. Set sail on the reimagined Insignia for 7 nights beginning August 1st, 2020. The Insignia features 4 unique open-seating restaurants, a world-class fitness center and spa, 8 lounges and bars, and a casino. Call Keen Luxury Travel at 800-856-1155. We'll be hosting a cocktail party, a trivia contest, and auditions to win a starring role in our very own onboard live radio reenactment show. Reserve your stateroom today by contacting Keen Luxury Travel and mention the Classic Radio Cruise. Prices start at just $11.99, which includes gratuities and free Wi-Fi. And you can take advantage of the O-Life Choice promotion, where you can choose shore excursions, a beverage package, or onboard credit. Don't wait. Space is limited. Call 800-856-1155. That's 800-856-1155. Or visit WGNRadioTheater.com and click the cruise banner.
Yeah, come on our cruise with us, right, Lisa?
Yes, this
is coming up.
You know what? I have never heard of a classic radio cruise, so this is our maiden voyage.
Yes. Come on our cruise with us August 1st. And Lisa has the 800 number.
Right. We're working with Keen Luxury Travel. Give them a call. We've got a great rate. 800-856-1155.
Right. You know what? 7 nights in Bermuda, on the way to Bermuda, plus Bermuda, coming back to New York. So it sails out of New York. And it is going to be great food because it's a terrific line, terrific cruise line.
Oceana Cruises.
Yeah, Oceana. Oh, Susanna, Oceana. They should do a song.
They rhyme.
Right.
Susanna and Oceana.
See, you're the jingle girl.
Right. I don't think I'd go with that, though, for my jingle.
But then we're going to have a radio reenactment where you star as one. Maybe you're going to be Nick Carter, Master Detective, or maybe you're the Shadow.
And we're going to have trivia contests and prizes,
yeah.
And we're going to have a cocktail party. And mostly,
you can drink Roma wines there.
I can. If they have any on Oceana, I will do just that.
Right.
But mostly, we are going to have fun spending time with our listeners, enjoying the life of the cruise, and exploring Bermuda.
Can't wait. So do check it out. And if you want to go to our website, WGNRadiotheater.com, there is a banner. Just scroll down, click the banner, and learn all about it. And come with us. We'd love it if you'd come with
us.
We're
really excited. We hope about that you'll join us.
Listeners, you know? It's going to be fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be eating a lot.
Oh, me too.
I have to lose some weight.
Beforehand. So you can eat a lot when you get there.
I don't even think I can fit into my bathing suit right now.
You've got a new one. Or so.
So
just make sure it's a Speedo, Carl.
So depressing. As you get older, it's tougher to keep the weight off.
It's true.
Jeez.
I think gravity just sort of pulls everything down, you know?
It's something.
It's something.
Yeah. It's hunger pangs. Just pulls everything down for
See, that apple just didn't do it for you?
No. In our next hour, we're going to rock it off into interstellar space on Dimension X. You won't want to miss that. Then after that, Nick Carter, Master.